Okay, good morning everybody. Thank you for coming very much. Nice to see people here. I hope everyone's keeping well, and good morning to everybody who's on Zoom. I don't know exactly how many people are on Zoom now, but I again would encourage anyone who can come in to come in. It's already a very nice, spaced out crowd here, and we're very happy to see new faces. That clock, by the way, is a few minutes fast. I make it 19. Oh, my clock's a few minutes slow? Okay, you know something, we'll go with that clock. The OU clock will be the Machria. So let me first of all announce a sponsorship. We're very happy that the sponsor this year is sponsored today. First of all, by our regular sponsors for the Holu 2021, anonymously in the merit of an Aliyah for the Neshamas of Matasiah Ben Yisrael, Arama Ben Achim Lev, and Eliana Bas Yaakov. And also we thank John very much. John has sponsored today's year as well, in loving memory of his mother, Rose Curry, Susanna Bas Gedalia, and Pearl, whose your side is on Chaf Aleph ER, I believe. Please God, this year should be an Aliyah for all of their Neshamas, and we're very grateful for all the sponsorship. Okay, so as I promised you, in honor, if you like, of this sort of Chol HaMoed period between, not just between Pesach and Shavuot, which is famously a Chol HaMoed, but also between Yom HaTzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim, where we're focusing more on Israel issues, I said I would move it from the very heavily hashkafic, which we were discussing last week and the week before, to the more specifically halachic. And therefore what I want to look at this week and next week are two very, very different topics, both of them relating to the modern reality in Israel, both of them relating to the halachic issue of pikuach nefesh. But you couldn't imagine two more different topics, both in terms of content and methodology. Today I would like to look at the question of using electricity on Shabbat, which we've never spoken about in this forum, and why there are so many people. I remember when we used to live in Har Nof, many people connect into the generator, they have their own private generators, not per house, but there's a generator that serves maybe 50, 60, maybe 100 families, and they would not, Chas V'Shalom, use the electricity from the grid coming out of the wall on Shabbat. Absolutely not. We'll see why they have a problem with that, and why many other people don't have a problem with that, and how Pikuach Nefesh connects into that. And what I like about this particular subject is it's very classic. We'll see a classic sugya in the halakhic issue of Ma'aseh Shabbat. What happens if a Jew does work on Shabbat? Can we benefit from it on Shabbat, after Shabbat? So in that sense, the material we're seeing today, you can apply it very halakhically and very practically to many other issues of life that come up, maybe not weekly, but certainly on a regular basis. Next week, I want to talk about the completely different issue of Pikuach Nefesh, to save the Jewish people in the case of the Mossad. What am I talking about? I don't work for the Mossad, just full disclosure, and I don't know if anyone from the Mossad tunes in weekly to the Shir. If they did, then they wouldn't tell me. Exactly, and then you would also deny it as well if you worked, so we'll never know. But a classic question has been asked. It was raised by Rabbi Ari Schwartz, a very well-known teacher and Rav, and he wrote a wonderful article on it about 8-9 years ago, maybe a bit more now, which is the following question, that if a married woman is working for the Mossad and has the opportunity to seduce somebody, let's say from the Iranian nuclear program, to get information out of that person which would be critical for the security of the state of Israel, would she be allowed to do so? And if so, why? And if not, why not? And we will see. I doubt this is a practical shaila for most people here, but again, I don't want to presume. But what we'll see next week, actually, is looking at that rather unusual question, an analysis of all sorts of sources that we would not have thought of necessarily, a little bit of midrash, we look at halakhically how that works, and I think you'll find that you'll find it entertaining next week. Hopefully you'll find it interesting and useful as well. But before we go to those more exotic places, let's stick with Shabbat electricity. So we looked last week at Rav Soloveitchik's vision of the state of Israel, the redemption of the Shechina. And one of the things he focused on there was the idea that the Dalet Amot of Halakha have been very minimized, if you like, by the Jewish reality in exile. Halakha now is Shabbat, it's personal, it's Kashrut. It doesn't apply to the klal. There may be lots of individuals, but they're not a klal. And his dream for Medinat Israel is that Halakha can now expand to its former glory and represent not just micro, but macro questions of how to run a nation, how to run a health service, how to run a military and economy, etc. And this, he said, would be a big Kiddush Hashem. And this issue is very much part of that question. So let's start with a quote from a news item about 7 or 8 years ago in Ynet to give us a little bit of a perspective and a background. So this little article was entitled "Kosher Electricity." So what it says: Number one, Electric Corps to invest $500,000 shekels in a bid to solve problems preventing thousands of Haredi families in Bnei Brak from connecting to power supply for fear of desecrating Shabbat. That's the title of the story. Now, the kashrut concept is usually reserved for food, but in some ultra-Orthodox communities it has to do with other vital issues, like connection to a power supply. The Haredi population in the central Israeli city of Bnei Brak, and I would add not just in Bnei Brak, but in hundreds of other places, and certainly other major cities like Yerushalayim, have been torn for years over the kashrut of electricity production. Entire communities are forced to pay 120 shekels, about $33, every weekend in order to connect to a generator, as they believe that the Israel Electric Corps power generation desecrates Shabbat. Now, I don't know if that figure is still correct, if it's gone up now. I haven't done any research as to how much people pay, but if it's even roughly correct, it's quite a lot of money. Every Shabbat to fork out 120 shekels, not every family has 120 shekels to spare every week, and therefore this is significant. They are confronted by other Haredi residents who see no halachic problem in connecting to the national electricity network and are forced to deal with the pollution and noise created by the generators. I remember that noise and pollution well from Har Hanof. I remember oil streaming down the steps, the Boston steps, on one particular occasion in Har Hanof where the generator had kind of gone wrong, and now that didn't happen every week, and there were times when there was a power cut in the general supply and the people on the generators got their power like this, and it was like, you know, They were the ones who were laughing, and they were whatever. It was an interesting dynamic. These residents have been trying for a long time to put an end to the operation of generators in the heart of the populated area, accusing the operators of the generators of trying to make a profit with rabbi support. I don't know who would ever try and make a profit like that. This battle has been taking place in courts for years, with no apparent solution on the horizon, so where would the electrifying solution come from? And it sets this up as a debate, as a fight, not between the secular and the religious, but between different religious groups. That's right, he says. The IEC is investing a lot of money and resources in making electricity kosher. About $500,000 shekels to be exact. The plan is quite simple: applying automation procedures in the power stations on Shabbat, leaving non-Jewish workers to observe the automatic production, and of course this will all be subject to the religious supervision of the Science Technological Halacha Institute. Will the drop in the number of workers on Shabbat spill into weekdays too, perhaps? But the IEC prefers to focus on the message that because it is a state-owned company rather than a private or a privatized one, it incorporates social considerations into its decisions, such as mending rifts in society, or in other words, settling disputes in Bnei Brak. It warms your heart that the Israeli electrical company apparently wants to make shalom between everybody in Bnei Brak as opposed to make profit. Anyway, that is a 2014 story. It's still very much current, no pun intended. And number two is from a year later, which is a speech made by Rav Yitzchak Yosef. Rav Yosef is, of course, the Sephardi chief rabbi, and he came out with the following. Number two, if you look here on the first line, HaRishon Letzion, this is also a news report, HaRishon Letzion, HaRav HaRashi, Yisrael, HaGon, HaRav Yitzchak Yosef, Yata Emesh B'Malech, Shiuro B'Hashvui, L'Makafa Neged HaShimush B'Chashmal B'Shabbat. He came out fighting against using electricity on Shabbat. Number two, second line, V'Hatzorech B'Chibur L'Generator, She'enu Muf'al Al Yidei Yehudim B'Tzuma Shal Shabbat. You should use a generator which is not operated by Jews on Shabbat, as opposed to the electricity grid which is operated by Jews on Shabbat. More of that soon. Rabbi Mitzibul B'nei HaTorah, Makpidim V'Einom Mitzpar Pashrim, they don't compromise at all, these people, many from the Jewish ultra-Orthodox world, Al Shimush B'Generata B'Shabbat, U'miknagdim L'Shimush B'Shabbat B'Chashmal HaMiyutar Al Yidei Chavrat B'Chashmal. They oppose using the electricity from the grid, She'ovdeh HaYudim Chalalim Shabbat, because their Jewish workers are breaking Shabbat, Ach Bekerev Bnei Edut HaMizrach, Loich Miru, but most Sephardi religious Shomer Shabbat are not concerned. And I think most from the religious Zionist world are also not particularly concerned by this issue. Why not? Says Rav Yitzchak Yosef, of course, he's Sephardi. But the second paragraph, this is what he said in the shir. Lechatchila, ideally, yesh lehachmir ulitzroch hachashmal be'emtaut generator. you should ideally try and use a generator on Shabbat, and quote now from Rav Yosef. Ein safek shehachilonim ha'ovdim b'chevrat ha'chashmal, the secular Israeli Jewish workers at the electricity company, hem lo begeder shogeg, we'll examine that question just in a few minutes. They're not doing this by accident. They know what they're doing. Behem ovdim b'mezid b'shabbat. They are intentionally breaking Shabbat. Eich anachnu ne'anim me'achashmal. How can we use this electricity when Jews are breaking Shabbos to make it? Chazonish katav, nikos v'chazonish, mi she'ne'anim me'achashmal b'shabbat zeh chilul Hashem. See, this is a chilul Hashem. Gam Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, we'll see soon also, b'minchat Shlomo kotev tshuva, Rav Shlomo Zalman writes a tshuva, lahatir lehenot b'chashmal b'shabbat. He allows, and this is the heter that people rely on, we'll see the parameters of that soon, he allows using electricity from the grid on Shabbat. Achosit, but he does add, ki misha yachol imana mitzavo alav bracha, that if you can avoid it, good on you. You get a bracha, it's a good chumrah, it's not a chumrah yitera, it's not an excessive chumrah. Ki yesh b'davah azeh chilul Hashem, because Rav Shlomo Zalman says, there is indeed a chilul Hashem to use that electricity. And finishes Rav Yosef, kol echad ve'echad sheyachol lahachmir al atzmo, ulishtamesh b'generato tavo alav bracha. I also give a bracha, anyone who could be machmir, don't use the electricity from the grid, use a private generator. Ze chumra tova. This is not excessive, this is appropriate. Mi sheyesh lo kesef, ve'sharut. Of course, if you can afford 120 shekels a week, fine. And ilom medaber alav rechim. I'm not talking to people who are trying hard to put food on the table, for them to keep a chumra for all that money. He's not talking to them. מי שיכול ויש לו אפשרות להתחבר לגנרטור, שיתחבר לגנרטור, he should do this. And the article closes here after Rav Yosef. יצוין, you should know, he says, כי על פי דעת החזון איש, קודש בחזון איש, ומרן שר התורה, רב חיים קניאבסקי, השימוש בגנרטור בשבת אינו עניין של לכתחילה, according to those other authorities, this is not a best practice, using a generator, אלא חובה מעיקר הדין. It is an absolute halachic obligation. It is actually prohibitive to use the lights. We'll see Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, if you go into a shul where the lights use electricity from the national grid on Shabbat, you may not open a siddur in that shul. Because you may not use the light to read from the siddur, even to daven, because the light is produced through chilul Shabbat, and it's absolutely prohibited. So this is quite strong language. We'll have to see the parameters of that now. Okay, so I gave you a little bit of a rundown on number two. One of the reasons I really enjoy preparing these shirim is because I find out stuff that I never knew before. I didn't know anything about power plants in Israel. It's not my field. But now I know a very small amount. And I've listed here the coal, gas and solar power plants. The date on the right-hand side is the date of their final date of their commission. This is when they became active. And you can see there, I don't need to go through this in detail, but what you can see from this list is that almost all of the power generators used in Israel are quite recent, they're quite modern. If you compare this with England, America, Europe, etc., you'll see they're using a lot of older generators. But the Israeli system, almost everything, if not everything, is within the last 25 years. And you'll also see that coal still produces a large amount of electricity compared even to gas and certainly to solar. So, you know, there are obviously people working in these power stations. They're not fully automated, but we will talk soon about what these people do and whether that's relevant on Shabbat. Okay, let's now look at the halachic questions. Looking on page 2 in source number 3. What does the Talmud say about Jews working on Shabbat? We'll talk about non-Jews in a minute. But first of all, let's focus on Jews. Says the Mishnah, number 3, the Mishnah. Hamatbil kelim b'shabbat. If you toivel a kli on Shabbat, you take a pot or a pan, or a plate, or knives, or forks, or whatever, to the kelim mikvah on Shabbat. Now, shogeg, if you did that by accident, yishkamesh b'hem, then that's fine, you can use them on Shabbat. Mezid, if you did it on purpose, lo yishkamesh b'hem, you can't do that, you can't use them on Shabbat. We'll come back to all of these soon. Hamaser, if you take trumot and matrot on Shabbat off the food, the hamavashel, or if you cook food on Shabbat, shogeg yochal, then if you did this by accident, the food's fine. You can eat the food. Mezid, but if you did it on purpose, lo yochal, you may not eat the food. And the final two cases, or really one case, hanoteya b'shabbat, if you plant a tree on Shabbat, shogeg, if you did it by accident, yikayem, you can keep it. Mezid, if you did it on purpose, Yakor, you have to rip it out after Shabbat, preferably. Okay? Ubeshvit, and if you did it on Shemitah year, then whether, Bein Beshogeg, Bein Bemezid, Yakor, we don't believe you did it Beshogeg, because everyone's trying to wheedle their way around Shemitah, and therefore you can't keep the tree. Okay, so what have we seen? A few different cases. Somebody who toggles a pot, somebody who takes Trumat Masrot, or cooks, or plants a tree. Now the first thing I would point out is that some of these are rabbinic, and some of these are Torah prohibitions. Right. To toggle a pot on Shabbat is prohibited. Why? How are you going to do it by accident, you're asking? Yes, I'll get to that in a second. To toggle a pot on Shabbat is a rabbinic prohibition. Because it looks like an attacking plea, you couldn't use this before, and now you can. However, to cook, or to plant a tree, is a Torah prohibition. Trumas and Masrot, depending on how you pass it and what you're doing. But you see this applies, first of all, to rabbinic and to Torah prohibitions, it seems. Second of all, your point is exactly the key point. How can you plant a tree by accident? It's not possible. So, to clarify, shogeg here doesn't really mean by accident. If you do something completely by accident on the Shabbat, you lean on the wall and there's a light switch there, you didn't realize and the lights go on or the lights go off, that's not called shogeg. That's called mitasek. You just did something completely natural and then completely unexpectedly things happened that you didn't intend at all. Shogeg here means that you did the act on purpose. Nobody plants a tree in their sleep. You did the act on purpose. But what did you not realize? Either you didn't realize that this was prohibited. No one told you that planting a tree was prohibited and you did it in good faith. You knew it was Shabbat and now you find out, didn't you know that was Asur? Oh, I never knew. Or you didn't realize it was Shabbat, which is less likely, but possible. You know, you woke up in the morning, you didn't know which day it was, you walked down the stairs, put on the kettle, put on some toast in the toaster, and then somebody says, what are you doing? It's Shabbat. Really? Okay, could be. Okay, you had a hard night the night before, a bit hungover, I don't know, whatever. But it doesn't mean you did it completely by accident. So what we see here, however, is the main distinction is between shogeg and mezid. If you didn't realize it was a problem, then we have less of a problem using it. But if you did know, and you did it anyway, then it's more of a problem halakhically. The Tosefta picks up on this in number 4, and puts some detail onto the Torah side of this, the cooking side. So this is a little bit complicated, and that's why I've given you a little table underneath, which explains it, certainly according to the way Rashi understands it, but have a look here in number 4. You have to remember these, because they're going to be important in a minute. Hamavashel Shabbat, says the Tosefta, someone who cooks on Shabbat. Beshogeg, if you did it by accident, now we know that means you didn't realize it was prohibited or it was Shabbat, etc. Yochel, then fine, you can eat the food. The mezid, lo yochel. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Oh, now we see a difference of opinion. Rabbi Meir draws the clear distinction. Anything you did by accident, the shogeg, is fine on Shabbat. Anything you did on purpose, you have to wait till later. Okay? You can eat it most Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda says, one stage stricter. No, the shogeg, yochel, lemati Shabbat. And Rashi understands that everybody has to wait till Motzei Shabbat to eat this, whether you did it on Shogeg or Mezid. You turned on the kettle or you made... This can happen, by the way. Not people don't turn on the kettle usually on Shabbat, but you say that you go to someone's house and they say, would you like a cup of tea on Shabbat? And you say, oh, yes, please. And they get a tea bag, stick it in the cup, and go over a tea bag, which is not permitted on Shabbat, according to any opinion to pour from a Kli Rishon onto the raw tea leaves in a tea bag. And now you're stuck, because now you want to know, ooh, I just saw, they didn't realize, let's assume that they keep Shabbat, they just didn't realize, or they forgot, or whatever it was. Can you drink the tea? All of a sudden, oh, actually, you know something, I don't feel like tea anymore. Or according to Rabbi Meir, if they were beshogeg, they didn't know it was wrong, whatever, you can drink it. They didn't do it on purpose. According to Rabbi Yehuda, I'm sorry, the tea is off the menu. You can only drink it on after Shabbat, and I suspect it won't be very tasty then. So, b'shogeg yochel b'motzei Shabbat, b'mezid lo yochel. So, Rashi says that this, again, a little bit more machbir, if the guy did it on purpose, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then he can never eat it, ever, in time, ever, even after Shabbat. Other people can eat it after Shabbat. And the most machmir opinion, the last line, Rabbi Yochanan Hasandla Omer, I don't care which it was, the shogeg yochel l'motzei Shabbat, on if you did it by accident, everybody has to wait for motzei Shabbat b'lolo, and he can never eat it ever. But mezid, and if he did it on purpose, then it's completely forbidden. Lo yochel lo, b'lo acherim, it has to be thrown away for everybody. Yes?
No,
he made this food, so he says, okay, I didn't realize, I'll eat it for Malava Malta. No, says Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, you can never eat it, you're finished. You did this wrong, it's your punishment. Next week you'll remember that it's Shabbat, etc., etc. Now, of course we have three opinions here. Rabbi Meir, who is the most lenient, Rabbi Yehuda, who is in the middle, and Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, who is the most extreme. So how do we rule? Over the page, please. Number 5. Says the Gemara, my time with the Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. What is Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, the most extreme position? He says it's always prohibited if someone did it on purpose. Where does he come from? So the Zayis Rabbi Chia Apitzcha the Rabbi Nasir. He comes from the following drasha that was well known at the time. It says in the Torah, Ushmatim et haShabbat ki kodesh ilachem. You must keep the Shabbat because it is kodesh for you. Ma kodesh, just like kodshim. If you made a korban, if you sanctified something as a korban, asur ba'achila, then you can never eat that for private use. It's now off the menu. Af ma'aseh Shabbat, so too, what you did wrong on Shabbat, asurim ba'achila. Kodesh. The Torah said it's kodesh. You broke Shabbat, it's kodesh. You can't eat it. So, ayachal afilu b'shogeg. You might have thought, well, this even applies to someone who did it by accident. I'm not realizing it was wrong. No, because the Tepotik says, Tamad lama mahalaleha mot yumad. It's only the serious, most serious problem is mahalale Shabbat. People who on purpose break Shabbat. But meizid amarati lechava lo b'shogeg. Fine. Pligi barav achav ravina. So, do we paskin like this view? Rabbi Yochanan Sandler learns it from a pasuk. So Rav Achan Ravina had a discussion about this and a disagreement. Chad Amar, one of them said, Ma'aseh Shabbat Doraita, that it's a Torah mitzvah like Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. But Chad Amar, one said, no, Ma'aseh Shabbat Rabbanan. We don't pass him like Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. Manda Amar Doraita Kedamina. We just saw from Rabbi Yochanan Sandler how the one who says it's Doraita learns from the Pasuk. If you break Shabbat on purpose, it's all off the menu forever. Well, Manda Amar Rabbanan, and the view that says it's rabbinic, says, no, Amar Kra, the Torah says, Kodesh he, Shabbat is the thing which is Kodesh, he Kodesh, the Ema Asaf Kodesh, but not the thing that you made on Shabbat. Where have we got to? We've got to understand now where Rabbi Yochanan Hassandler is coming from. He understands it's a Torah prohibition. If somebody on purpose breaks Shabbat, knowing it's Shabbat, saying, I don't care it's Shabbat, and they do something, that's off the menu for everyone forever. Because it's a Torah thing, it's like a korban, it's Kodesh completely. Do we pass in this way? So we saw at the end, the late Amorim, one said yes, one said no. How do we know which we follow? So here, this is a cloud you can take away for life in learning Gemara or Halacha, number 6. The Gemara Mitzachim says, B'kola Torah kula Rav Acha l'chumra v'ravina l'kula. Whenever you see these two people, Rav Acha and Ravina, arguing like we saw at the end of 5, Rav Acha is the one who is strict, Ravina is the one who is lenient, the hilchata ka Ravina l'kula. And we pass him like the lenient opinion. Okay, good. So now at least we've kicked out Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, which was the strict opinion that said if someone breaks Shabbat, there's a Torah prohibition to ever benefit from that. We're not going to follow that. But what about Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda? We're back with those two. If we go like Rabbi Meir, then we're more lenient. You can drink the tea on Shabbat if the guy did it by accident. If you go like Rabbi Yehuda, then you can't. So a very interesting Gemara, just a final installment in here, number 7. Ki moir lehu Rav l'talmidei. When Rav would teach his students, Moir leka Rabbi Meir. He taught leniently like Rabbi Meir. What does that mean? Someone makes you a cup of tea on Shabbat and they didn't realize they couldn't do it like that. The Seder, you can drink it. Don't worry about it. Says the Gemara, but he darish bepirk, but when he gave the shir in shul, darish kareb Yehuda, he passed in lechumra. Mishum amei ha'aretz, because I can't trust these people. The balabatim I can't trust with all the kulas. It's very interesting, just methodologically. Do you ever get a situation where the rabbi says one thing to one group of people, a different thing to another group of people? You do, right? And you see it here. Rav, when he was with his guys in yeshiva, okay, I can trust you guys. If I give you a leniency, you won't take it to the next stage, which is wrong. But the guys in shul, I don't know, they're all, you know, who knows who's listening to what, how, etc. The question for us is, well, who are we reading this Gemara? Are we the guys in the in crowd, in the, because we see when he passed into his Talmidim, or are we the Amoratim sitting in shul? That's an interesting question, because we're in on the story. So the Shulchan Aruch, looking number 8, unfortunately says that we're the Amoratim sitting in shul. Looking number 8. Says the Shulchan Aruch, and I'll get through this quite quickly, Hamavashel b'Shabbos, if you cook on Shabbos. Or she'ata achem mishar malachas, or not just cooking, if someone did anything on Shabbat, plant a tree, did borer, don't people do borer all the time? Yeah? You're about to have dinner, and you go, and someone says, oh, I'll just set the table, or whatever it is, or the Friday night, they're doing it for Shabbos morning, and they sort all the cutlery out, and now you're thinking, oy vey, can I use these knives and forks? Someone's just broken Shabbos. So it's just broken Shabbos and sorted his cutlery, and that's my cutlery for tomorrow. So Rabbi Meir would say, it's okay, because they didn't realize. Rabbi Yehuda would say, no, you can't use it till after Shabbos. So the Shulchan Aruch says, B'mezid, if they did it on purpose, asur lo la'olam, then that person can never benefit. Well, acharim mutar l'motzei Shabbos, and you can benefit after Shabbos. For shogeg, and if they did it not knowingly, unknowingly, bo bayom gam la'acher, asur bo bayom gam la'acher, you can't use it on Shabbat either, or la'erev mutar gam lo miyad, but you have to wait till after Shabbos. And the Ramah says, if it's a non-Jew, we'll deal with that another time. Okay, I'm not giving a hilchos Shabbos here, but there are a number of ways to avoid, there are a number of ways, levaita, to avoid setting the table in a way which is transgresses Bora. Number one, you can wait till just before you eat lunch and set the table then, because you can take the good from the bad just before you need it. Okay, so you can do that on Shabbos morning, you can't do that on Friday night. Or, what you could do is on Friday night, when you're washing up all your cutlery, as you take it out and you wash each knife, you can put each knife in a separate place because you're already holding it, it's not already mixed in, and you can put it down and you just, if you're a more organized person on Friday night, it makes life easier on Shabbat morning. If you just throw everything into a pile or in the cutlery rack, then you're going to have to wait. There are always ways to deal with Bora, you just have to know the workarounds. They're not loopholes, you just have to know how Bora works. Not for now, but it's an interesting question. Okay, so the Shekhinah is happening like Rabbi Yehuda. Which means that if a Jew breaks Shabbos, even the shogeg, you can't use it till after Shabbat. Now you can see already where we're going to plug this in, again, no pun intended, to the electricity system. The Mishnah Berurah brings down a little bit of a lenient option. He says, if you're, the Vilna Gaon, first of all, he says, Shulchan Aruch passes like Rabbi Yehuda, because that's the Rambam, that's the Rif, that's the Gaon, and there's a lot of people who go in that more machmi way. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan the Sandler, the Gemara already threw out as an option, the most extreme. But Rabbi Yehuda, he says, is mainstream Rishonim. However, the Mishnah Berurah brings the Shita of the Vilna Gaon, who passes like Rabbi Meir. Passes like Tosfos, like Rabbi Meir, and the Mishnah Berurah says, if you're in a tight spot on Shabbat, and it's awkward for you not to eat the thing or use the thing, then you can rely on Rabbi Meir, even though the Shulchan Aruch says not to, you can rely on Rabbi Meir and you can drink the tea. So the bottom line, by the way, with the tea is if you see this nice, unknowing person go to the kettle and then pour over the tea bag, so if it's going to be awkward or difficult or upsetting the person in any way to say, I'm not going to have the tea, then you can drink the tea. Because the Shulchan Aruch, even though he paskens not like that, the Mishnah says you can rely on the Vilna Gaon in the case of need. Okay, just so that you know if that ever happens. I have a problem, usually, not a problem, but I have had problems in the past when you go to somebody's house and they say, would you like to make your own Kiddush? Friday night, let's say, and I always say no, of course you should make Kiddush, you're the Baal HaBayis, I don't want to be do my own thing, and then they make Kiddush and make a complete mess of the whole thing. Okay, and you know, it's not hard to, people say, Baruch Shem Mochalom, and then Al-Mochalom, and I'm afraid to say, that's actually not Brocha, Al-Mochalom. And okay, I'm not, you know, being critical, but I don't have a problem, having heard the Kiddush, it's a bit hard to say, you know something, actually thinking about it, maybe I will make my own Kiddush. It's not so easy to do that. So just, you know, you have to try and work out in advance whether you're going to have a problem or not. Okay, so let's go over the page, because we have to move on. But what we've seen here is the basic outline of the halacha, which is, the halacha is basically Rabbi Yehuda, that you can't use it on Shabbat if a Jew does it, even b'shogeg, and if they're b'shogeg and you really need to, then maybe like Rabbi Meir if you have to. What about a rabbinic prohibition? So they're already, we're definitely more lenient, and I brought you number 11, the Mishnah Berurah in the Halacha says that even though there are people who equate rabbinic and Torah prohibition, top of page 4, number 11, and by the way, we saw this in the Mishnah, remember? It said he talked about toivling telem, which is rabbinic, in the same breath as cooking, which is Torah, even though there are people that say it's the same. The Vilna Gaon, again, brings in the Chai Adam that in a rabbinic prohibition, then you can always rely on the fact that if they're b'shogeg, if they didn't realize it was wrong, then you can use it on Shabbat. So with rabbinic prohibitions, we're a little bit more lenient. Now, let's plug this into the power plant. How does this work? So these workers are doing things on Shabbat. We'll talk about what they're actually doing in a minute. The first question, are they Jewish or are they not Jewish? So let's assume that they're Jewish because that's the whole discussion. Should they get more non-Jewish workers? We'll see Rav Moshe soon. So they're Jewish. Are they doing it b'shogeg or b'mezid? So Rav Yitzchak Yosef said, well, these people know what they're doing. They know that it's Shabbat. They know they're Jewish and they're doing it on purpose. So that's not 100% clear in all cases. A Jew, let's say, who has been brought up in a secular environment in Israel, he knows that today's Shabbat, or she knows it's Shabbat, but they're pretty clueless about what Shabbat entails. And they probably wouldn't have any idea that by twiddling the knob, what they're doing. I have a cousin, traditional Israeli from a Sephardi family. He married an Ashkenazia, grew up in a secular home in Israel. She came to our sukkah. She said, "I've never sat in a sukkah before." She was 20 years old. She's never sat in a sukkah. You can grow up in Tel Aviv, you never sat in a sukkah. Yes, you can grow up in Tel Aviv, you never sat in a sukkah before. You can grow up in other places, too, Haifa, whatever. So you could maybe say that, maybe they're the shogeg. And maybe I can rely on Rabbi Meir, but Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef wasn't very happy about that. He said, no, they're doing Torah prohibitions, turning it up, igniting the burners, extinguishing the burners. If the demand for electricity goes up, then they turn up another, put on another generator, whatever, and that causes breaches on a Torah level. So it seems that we have a problem. Because we use electricity all the time. We use it for heating, for air conditioning. I'm not talking about turning it on Shabbat. I'm leaving it on from before Shabbat, just the lights. We use lights, we use refrigeration to keep our stuff in the freezer. It seems that all this electricity, if it's being produced by Jews who break Shabbat on purpose, and maybe even by accident, we're not allowed to do it. Now, so what's the heter? It sounds like we should all be on a generator on Shabbat. So the heter is pikuach nefesh. Oh, is it pikuach nefesh for me to have my cholent on Shabbat? Absolutely not. But for some people, it is pikuach nefesh. We know the principle. Look at number 12. Let's look at this in a couple of minutes. Reb Shimon ben Menasya Omer, v'shomer uvenei Yisrael et haShabbos. The Jews have to keep Shabbat. What does that mean? Amra Torah, the Torah is telling us, chaleil alav Shabbat echachat. You should break one Shabbos, kidei sheyishmor Shabbat asharbis, to enable people to survive, to keep many future Shabbatot. Alternatively, Am Rav Yehuda, Am Shmuel, V'chai Bahem, last week's parasha, very famous, V'chai Bahem, you should live by them, V'losh Hayumut Bahem, and no, you shouldn't die by them. If someone says, break Shabbat or you'll die, you always break Shabbat. Now, why do I need two different psukim? In fact, in the Gemara it gives more than two. Interesting practical application, Nafkamina, between them, can we break Shabbat to save an embryo? What if Elena, a woman, says that she feels that unless she goes to the hospital right now, she could, God forbid, lose the baby? So according to V'chai Bahem, if someone is alive, you can break Shabbat to keep them alive. So this baby, this fetus, is not yet alive. Certainly not in halakha. It doesn't have a status of alive. On the other hand, if you use the principle V'shamaru v'nei Yisrael et haShabbos, I should break Shabbos to increase net Shmirat Shabbat, then for sure I should break Shabbat, because this fetus will, please God, survive, be born, and go on to keep Shabbat. Okay, there's just some differences between them. And the Rambam says in number 13, D'chuya hi Shabbat etel sekam nefashot. Shabbat is pushed aside. Now, this is a very interesting point. What does the D'chuya mean? There's a lot of discussion in the halachic process as to whether something is D'chuya or Hutra. D'chuya or Hutra. D'chuya means it still basically applies, but there's an override. I can override it, push it to the side, but where I don't need to, then I shouldn't. Whereas hutra means, that's it, it's gone, it's finished, it's not there anymore. Pikuach nefesh just evaporates the Shabbat idea, and I don't even need to try to minimize, because it's just not there. So Rambam says, d'chuyahi Shabbat etzal sekan nefashot. So Shai Kolomis is like every other mitzvah, pretty much, except the big three, that's coming up next week. So someone who has potentially a life-threatening situation, you may do anything for them on Shabbos. Al pi roif uman, you have to know from a doctor this is needed. Shel oif makam, a local doctor. Sofik shu tzarek lehalel sa Shabbos. Sofik ein tzarek. So what if I'm not sure? Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. Maybe he needs, maybe he doesn't. Mechal alim et Shabbos. We always break Shabbos. She sofik nefashes doche et Shabbos. Even a question. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins in the next source, I'm not going to read it now, but let's stick with number 13 for a second, that even if there's a building that collapses on Shabbat, and maybe there was somebody underneath, and maybe there wasn't, and even if there was, maybe they're alive, and maybe they're you can add on all the maybes you like, you can always break Shabbat, if there's a possibility of even lengthening that person's life, even a minute or two. Okay, that's clear. Stay with number 13, says the Rambam, when you have to break Shabbat, to the Kuach Nevesh, we don't need to ask a non-Jew. We should do it ourselves. We don't have to get a kid to do it, to minimize. No, he says, you, a grown-up, adult Jews, rabbis, They should do it, but asur lehitmameh. You may not hesitate, b'chilul Shabbos, to break Shabbos, l'chayl sheyesh b'sakana sheneemar, asher yatzei asam adam v'chay b'hem, lo sheyamas b'hem. And then the Rambam gives a very important hashkafic line, which I wish we had time to talk about more. Lamadatai, you see from here, she'ein mishpatei Torah nekama ba'olam. The Torah is not bringing its mitzvahs to bring harshness or cruelty to the world, vengeance to the world, ela rachamim v'chesed v'sholem ba'olam. The Torah is there to bring mercy and kindness and peace to the world. Now, how far you take that line of the Rambam in other areas is a very interesting discussion. But overall, the hashkafa of the Torah is not there to be cruel. Sometimes there are cases that feel cruel. Does that mean we have an override? No, but that's not for now. But clearly, we set aside Shabbat for the purpose of pikuach nefesh, and therefore that's your heter. When the people in the power station turn up the power, they're not just doing it for my cholent, they're doing it for the army bases, for the police stations. Can you imagine if all the army bases and police stations suddenly lost power? And that's it. Oh, the police don't attack for now, please wait till the power goes back on. Loss of the street lighting. It's unbelievable when you're used to street lighting and the lights will go off, everything looks very dark. Obviously, it's a strange thing to say. But maybe it doesn't make any difference in Haifa if the lights go off in the street, but if you live in a yeshuv, in the middle of nowhere, and all the lights in the yeshuv go out, that's a serious issue. Hospitals, etc. Private as well. There are people who have private medical equipment at home. People have home dialysis. People have ventilators at home. People have medication in the fridges, in refrigerators, which is needed. Insulin, whatever it is, that if the fridges go off for a period of time, then it's pikuach nefesh. So the heter is that when the person turns on the power station, they're not just doing it for me, they're doing it for the pikuach nefesh situation. The problem is that in today's world, the hospitals are not relying on the grid for their electricity. And neither are the police stations, and neither are the army bases. Because if you did that round us, then it would be och and veh, as they say, because the power goes off far more than it should. Every hospital has a generator. What, you think all the lights are going to go off in Hadassah and Karen just because the power? They all have their own generators. So if they all have their own generators, so we're back to square one. Who's the guy turning it on for? So you're back to the people sitting at home on dialysis. They don't have their generators. Most people in a house don't have a generator. I know people who do, by the way. In Alan Shvud, it's quite useful every now and then. It's not so funny. I remember in Harnoff, even when we had the Snowmageddon in 2013, oh, isn't it wonderful? There's a meter of snow outside. It's wonderful unless all your heating's off and all your lights are off and you're in the house, which many people have, whatever. So that's really still the heter, and that is where things are coming from in terms of the ability to turn it on. We'll see how strong that heter is. By the way, I brought in number 15. The Shevet HaLevi says, are you allowed to use a generator on Shabbat? Let's say it kicks in automatically, but it makes an awful noise. They are not quiet, these generators. There's the principle in Hilchos Shabbos that says you're not allowed to use equipment on Shabbos that makes a very loud noise, called Uf Shemilsa. The Gemara there says if you're going to run your flour mill on Shabbat, so you could, in theory, set it all up before Shabbat with a big funnel, put all your grain in. I'm not going to use it on Shabbat, but all through Shabbat it'll go... And everybody can see Yossel's mill is working on Shabbat. Now, you didn't do anything wrong. You set it all up on a time switch, as it were. But no, it's a zilzul. It's not appropriate for Shabbat. So is the generator the same? I've heard this question asked about a dishwasher. If you can set your dishwasher. The truth is, if your dishwasher is making the noise of a flour mill on Shabbat, then it's time to buy yourself a new dishwasher. They shouldn't be making that. But dishwashers are pretty quiet, low hum in the background. There are other questions, by the way, about dishwashers, which is most dishwashers have an override that when you open the door, it turns off the water, which you would want, most cases. Because of that, it may be that closing the door on the dishwasher, even when the power's off, is the thing that actually connects it to make it go on when the time switch turns it on. I'm not saying it's prohibited, I'm just saying it's questionable. Anyway, the Shevet HaLevi says, generators are probably okay, certainly for shuls, public buildings, etc. Okay, good. So that's the heter. People need their dialysis machines, they need stuff at home. But what about me? It's still my cholent. Why can't I just say, okay, so the guy in the power station has a heter for turning it on. But why am I allowed to use it? So I'll have cold cholent. And the guy on the ventilator, Baruch Hashem, he's fine, but I don't need the cholent. So look at number 16. If you're allowed to break Shabbos for a person who really needs it, can other people piggyback on that? And say, oh, well, now that you've done that, That's handy. Look at number 16. Hilchata, says the Gemara, Hashoichet l'choyle b'Shabbos. The doctor comes and says, this man needs fresh meat, he needs a good steak or he's going to die. So you can shech an animal on Shabbos. And you can cook the steak on Shabbos for the person who's really sick. Mutter l'bari b'umta, and I, as a healthy person, I can chew on the meat as well. I don't need the cooked meat, but now you shechted it, I can eat the raw meat. People ate raw meat. My timer, why, what's the reason? Kaven, the iash l'kazayis basa b'lo shchita. Since he has to shech the animal, even to get the meat for the sick person, he kashachit, adai to the chole kashachit. So when he shechs the animal, it's for him. He didn't do any extra for me. There was one act of shchita. So why shouldn't I eat from that? He had to do the same shchita for one person to eat as for 100 people to eat. However, says the Gemara, hamavashu l'chole b'Shabbos. But if you cook for a chole on Shabbos, then osel l'bari, then I can't eat from that food. Oh, there's a bit of leftovers. Oh, that's nice. I'll have a bit of that afterwards. No. Gezeirah shema yarbe b'shvilo. Because we're worried if healthy people are going to eat, so the person cooking for the sick person might, oh, I'll chuck a bit extra in, because, you know, while I'm doing it, I'll do a bit more for you. Shchita, there is no more you can do. It's one act. Whereas cooking, you could always add a bit more. So that says Rav Shlomo Zalman. So what is the power station more akin to? Shchita or bishul? And he says shchita, because the guy turns up the knob, and that turns up the power for everybody. He's got to do that. He doesn't know where the person with the dialysis machine is, or the... He does just one thing. It's for everybody. He does the same action, whether it's for this guy or whether it's for 100,000 guys. So he says it's the same principle, and I brought you here, I'm not going to read it now, but in number 17, from the Shmir Shabbos Hilchosa, from Rav Yeshua Neuwirth, who obviously his Rebbe is Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Yeshua Neuwirth brings down there that the heter of using electricity on Shabbat is that the Jew working in the factory has to do the same maisa for everybody, and since he doesn't know where the people are, and he has to do the one thing, so you can piggyback on that, and you can do it. However, he says, top of Numbers, page 6, if you know for sure that there were no people in danger that were helped by this, let's say that the electricity in just your house goes out, or three houses around you, and you know everybody who lives there, and there's nobody who's in life-threatening danger, and they don't need the electricity, and then someone from the electrical company comes and fixes up your electricity on Shabbat, a Jew, he says, then you can't use it, because then they weren't doing it for anybody who really needed it and had a heter to do it for. He was doing it for you, and then you can't do it. Then even if your toddler comes on again, interesting Shiloh, if there's a power cut, and all your stuff goes cold, and then an hour later the power goes back on, and all your stuff heats up again, are you allowed to eat it? Is the water okay to make tea from? Because the water was just heated up through the electricity that was turned back on. So again, if they did that beheter, then you can. It's like the person eating a bit of the meat from the shechita. If you know it was just for your house or the next house, and there's nobody who really needed it, halachically, then he says you can't eat the food, etc. And therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Goren, also permitted Jewish workers in the power plants to do that. Why not use non-Jews? The answer is that would be much better. And because you can, even though you can't ask a non-Jew directly to do something for you on Shabbos, when it's a tzorech rabim, when it's a need for the community, which this clearly is, let's say the Eruv goes down on Shabbos. So anyone who, you know, in England, whatever, knows about the Eruv, there's a non-Jewish company on, you know, on call, the Eruv goes down, they'll somehow get notified, I don't know how they notify them, they'll go and they'll fix it. And the Mishnah Berurah says explicitly, you can ask a non-Jew directly to do something like tzorech rabim. So, presumably, the much better solution would be to ask non-Jews. Look at number 19. Rav Moshe in America has a tshuva about the Israel situation. Number 19. V'davah hishtamshut v'chashmal b'shabbat. Eini roye chiluk mamash bein hishtamshut l'hayir b'neirot. There's no real difference between using light, v'chashmal from the electricity, bein ha'makara, or using the fridge. It's all really the same. If there is a heter, so if they need to do it bishvil abatikholim, because of the hospitals, there's no chilul Hashem. They have to do it for the hospitals. I just don't understand why they need to rely on this. You could just get the hospitals to have a generator, which they do, and again, when Moshe was writing this, there really was no such thing as home dialysis or home ventilation, so that would obviously be much more relevant now. Why can't you get non-Jews?
שיעשו כל העבודות במכונות החשמל הגדולה. What's the problem? וכיוון שאינו בענייני הרפואה, בענייני הצל הגופי הוא, לא ישן זה להזריז לעשות על ידי ישראל גדולים. You don't have to use Jews to do this for ביקורת נפש. Here you could use non-Jews quite happily. שלכן הרי אותו לעשות על ידי ישראל, ולכן היית הכלל, there's no heter at all. You're telling me there are no non-Jews in Israel that could work in the places? They could. ואם יש לחוש שהנוכרים יקלקלו, maybe you're worried someone's going to sabotage the plant. I don't want Israel's power system to be left in the hands of anything other than Jews, whatever you might say that. He says, Rav Moshe, I don't buy that. Yamidu Shomrim, have a God. Israel have a Jewish God. So check that they're not going to do anything untoward. Aval Moshe Mishdamshim Bechashmal Mekarer. So he says, I don't understand. I don't understand the Hesed. And then he gives at the end, could be this is the Hesed. Because people have refrigerated food. What's the thing you're most concerned about when the power goes out? So you'll sit in the dark, you use an electric light, but all the meat's in the freezer. I mean, yeah, the first thing my wife says to me when the power goes out is, don't open the fridge! Don't open the freezer! Because you forget, you open all of a sudden, all the warm air's gone in, and the power, you never know if the power's going to be out for 5 minutes or 2 hours. So he says, maybe because of the refrigerated food. Ulai mitzad shehar bepamim mitkalkilim ha'ochlim. Penultimate line, maybe the food goes off. And since we paskin, remember earlier that we don't paskin like Rabbi Yochanan the Sandler. It's a rabbinic prohibition. Since it's a rabbinic prohibition, hekilu behesed merubah, and you're going to lose $300 worth of meat, and think how much multiplied by all of the Jews who are going to lose the meat. Maybe that's why you're allowed to use electricity, even though he can't think of a good heter for the guy in the factory to turn it on. But he said, ultimately, maybe you can use the electricity. That they, you know, fetch, but it basically says that must be what people rely on. And even Rav Shlomo Zalman, go over to page 7, even Rav Shlomo Zalman, who is to say, Rav Shlomo Zalman allows it. He's fine with it. The answer, he's not fine with it. Rav Shlomo Zalman in number 20, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he basically says, he ends with very harsh words, and he says, we enjoin the workers, the electricity companies, to find non-Jewish workers. Because he says, I'll give you a heter because of the hospitals, etc. But I don't like doing it if I don't have to. So it's not just a blanket heter. And why can't they get more non-Jews to work there? The answer is, we saw in this article at the beginning, they were trying to get more non-Jews to work there. Why hasn't that happened? Because of the unions and other things. Because the unions obviously want to protect the trade unions, their own trade. I don't know what the trade union for electricity workers is. I'm sure there is one. I remember more about the unions in England than the unions in Israel. Was there? Okay, fine. So they're obviously not happy. You're going to take all our jobs. You're going to bring all these non-Jews to work there just because some mashuganas in this town or that town won't use the fridge on Shabbos. They're not interested. So it's political as well, trying to make this work. Of course, there is another answer, which is automation. And the real truth is that in modern electricity supply systems, almost everything is automated. Many of these tshuvas that we've seen from Rav Moshe, from Rav Shlomo Zalman, they were written 40, 50 years ago, when there was a lot more active intervention that was needed. In the early days, they needed to maintain every few hours. They needed to do something, shovel something. They weren't shoveling coal in, but whatever they needed to do, they did. Today, it all hums in a very automated way. Just look at this little article I brought you from 2017, from America. It says here, this has nothing to do with Israel. It is a Michigan-based energy firm here, revealed plans to spend $1 billion to build a 1,100-megawatt fire station. When the station enters service in 2022, it will replace 3 existing coal-fired units that currently employ more than 500 people. What are the job openings at the new gas-fired plant? 35 full-time employees. Here we are, 500 people, replaced by 35 people. It's the story of our times, right? Louisiana as well, they made a new plant there, 31 people. And in the second paragraph, the big reason is the new gas-fired power plants are equipped with sensors that provide constant data streams that are used to monitor turbine performance and feed predictive maintenance algorithms. Predictive maintenance means that maintenance outages can be scheduled well in advance of an equipment failure and reduce to almost zero the need for in-house maintenance staff. I don't ask me how these algorithms work, but it's all clever stuff. They know, what is the biggest single surge of power every day? It's the lights going on and the lights going off. They plan all that in. They don't suddenly think, oy vey, the lights just went on, get someone to turn the machines up. Of course not. It's all built in the event that there's an unusual surge in power or an unexpected major maintenance fault. Some wire could break, something could fall on a wire, so then they need to call people in. But everything, I remember in England, the biggest power surges usually were people putting the kettle on in between, in the break between the, you know, prime time TV type things. That's when all the, you know, whatever it was back in the day. So they can probably build the algorithm into that as well, when they know that, I suppose these days with Netflix it's a bit difficult because, you know, everyone's watching at different times, there are no breaks anyway. Whatever, fine. So Rav Halperin, Yitzhak Halperin, he comes in here and says a very interesting thing. Rav Halperin was the head of the Institute for Science and Technology. I think he's no longer alive. He has an interesting article where he suggests as follows. He says, I'm not sure if automation really helps. Let's say it's all automated. So what is making the power go on and off? It's the non-observant Jews in their homes turning on and off their equipment in Israel. That's what's actually triggering all this, because it's designed to go up if this happens and down if that happens. He says that might actually be even worse. Why? Because at least when the guy in the power station did it, he had a heter to be kuach nefesh, even if it's a bit shaky. The guy sitting putting his toaster on in wherever it is in Chadera, he hasn't got a heter for anything. He's just doing it for himself. In the end, he says, no, it's probably a bit of a grommer. It's not that you can't tell which guy actually did the thing that pushed the straw that broke the camel's back. It's not so straightforward. And therefore, at the end, he said that's probably better to be automated anyway. And that's largely the issue. Now, last page. Here you have, I think, really what we were talking about last week with Rav Soloveitchik as well. It's not just about halacha. It's about how do we relate to the country. What's going on? The last page. The Chazon Ish. He is the important voice we've not heard yet. He was living in the 50s, and he says in number 22, the Kol Zeh, Kishazerim HaChashmal Huchan Me'erev Shabbat. But all the issues of timers and switches and this, is I'm only talking about electricity which was all set up before Shabbat. The Sha'on Mafsik Et HaChevel HaChashmali, and the timer will break the electricity or turn it on, the Chozer, okay, the Koshra, and then reconnect it. Aval Im Naaseh B'Tachanat HaChashmal B'Shabbat. But if your electricity is produced on Shabbat in the electrical generating company, Al Yidei Yisrael, She'enu M'Shamah Shabbato, through a non-observant Jew, you can't benefit from it. Ah, what about the heter of the hospitals? Which in the Chazon Ish say really was. They didn't have their own generators. The afim huva open sheyesh heter b'shimusha min adin. And even if technically you are allowed to turn these generators on because of the people who really need it, asul ishtamesh bo. I hold that that doesn't help you. You sitting in shul, you can't use it. Mipnei sheyesh b'shimusha, it's a chilul Hashem. It's a chilul Hashem. She'enu chas lechvod shamayim. You're not worried enough about Shabbos. You don't care enough about Shabbos. Kevan shehu shimush tziburi, and it's a very public way. Va'oyvim b'Shabbos who oitzed b'mered rachmana litzlan. And the guys in the electricity company are doing this to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is an interesting construct. Whether that's the intention of these people or whether it's just a statement about non-observant Jews in Israel. You don't care enough about this situation. You're not bothered, he says, enough about Shabbos to make a stand on this. The Hanene Mimatzav made, if you benefit from this action on Shabbos, you are giving testimony, Chas v'Shalom She'ein Libot Koev Al Chilul Shabbos. So you're not bothered anymore about Chilul Shabbos. The Erav, and it should be, please God, Sheyeshuva v'Tshuva Shleima B'Meirah. And therefore, that's the fact that almost all of the Haredi world that does not use electricity on Shabbos from the grid, this is the Chazon Ish they're relating on. You can turn around and say, yeah, but there's a heter because of Pikuach Nefesh. Look, that's not the point. Yes, there is a heter, but we need to make a stand because there's Chilul Shabbos going on, and we're not happy that the secular state of Israel is not worried about Chilul Shabbos. So you have to spend this money, says Rav Chaim, says the Chazon Ish, in order to make that public stand. It's almost a demonstration that you're not happy to be in a secular state where there is Chilul Shabbos going on that kind of public level. And no amount of heterim are going to help you here. Once you take the stand, it doesn't help to say, well, actually, you know about Pekuach Nefesh. I don't care about Pekuach Nefesh. That helps the guy in the maybe is turning it on, but doesn't help you. Interesting. I brought you at the end, and I leave you to read this on your own. First of all, a tshuva that I brought you a few weeks ago. Remember we had a series on autopsies? a while ago now. I think that was when we were on Zoom, yeah? I think something like that. I think it was December. So I brought you Rav Weinberg, the Sridei Eish, who talks about the issue of autopsies and brings all the tshuvas of the Nodeh Yehuda and different things. You can't do an autopsy unless there's clear pikuach nefesh. And he has a very significant piece here where he says, we're not talking about individuals anymore in the state of Israel. We're talking about a she'elat hamedina. It's not just about, can you do this? It's about, how are we going to have a health service with doctors unless those doctors can have experience in anatomy? And that pikuach nefesh is not lefaneinu in the sense that it's right here, right now, but that's it's a different perspective. He's saying you can't say we'll rely on non-Jewish doctors, we'll rely on Bali Tshuva, we'll rely on Olim Chadashim. No, we need a health service in the land of Israel. He didn't live in Israel, he lived in Europe. He says, but it's no longer the same kind of shaila. So to Rav Rosen, at the bottom on the electricity, he says, you can't look at this just as an individual shaila writ large to a million people. This is a shaila of the Medina. It's Hilchot Medina, and it's not the same. Meaning, you don't just invent a load of new principles, you still have the same halakhic principles, but one of the fundamental differences in perspective, and we'll see this more in future Shiurim, Bezrat Hashem, is do you view the Jewish people in this country as 7 million times an individual? In which case, there is no difference between the Shaila for an individual and the Shaila for 7 million people, other than sometimes a rabbin has certain heterim, but it's basically lots of individuals. Or do you view this as, no, we're in a whole new paradigm now. This is a Jewish country, this is a Jewish state, it doesn't mean that we can do whatever we like, there's a halakhic system, but you have to have different considerations than the ones that were applied 100, 200, 300 years ago because of the reality of the Medina. And obviously Rav Gorin talks a lot about that, Rav Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer talks a lot about that, and this is in essence, I think, part of what's going on here. And therefore, I don't know if anybody here uses a generator on Shabbat. We don't, full disclosure. We didn't in Aranoff, and we don't say where we are. Although our electricity goes up so much, I think it will be quite useful to actually use a generator during the week as well. But here you have it. And now you see why the people who use the generators won't compromise, and the people who don't use the generators don't feel they need to compromise in that sense, and that way too. Okay, that's enough for today. I hope that was helpful and instructive. And again, these principles can be applied in many. Next time someone makes a cup of tea for you on Shabbos, then just maybe you don't want to look at how they're doing it, but if you do, then that's the way to look at it. Okay, please God, we'll go on next week with the honey trap and all sorts of exciting questions from there.